Oisín Kelly, our head of sports with us. Hi, Oisín.
Good morning, Greg.
A lot of interest out there at the moment in terms of, I suppose, the round robin series now that we're heading into. The conversation about tickets and everything is coming up again. And also, I suppose, access on the TV and, from our perspective, of course, access on the radio. So we are heading into a series of three games, home, away, neutral.
That's correct.
Right. So
against Tyrone, Cork and Clare.
First game is on the 25th of May. Do we know, by the way, where the neutral venue is yet? Is that likely
that's
to be
not.
Castlebar?
That'll be in the next couple of weeks. Could be Castlebar, could be Carrick and Shannon, could be Marchwick Park in Sligo. Could be in Galway. We don't know. We don't know. They could end up making full weekend of double headers from Croke Park that weekend. We don't know. We don't know what, but that's just too far away at the minute. We're sort of dealing with the immediate stuff that was announced yesterday.
Of course, yeah. Now, the thing about another area of controversy, and I think we've got away all right up until now, there's been upset down the country, particularly in relation to hurling. This is in terms of TV access. So the game has been confirmed for McCool Park. It's got an evening kickoff. And it's only going to be... Sorry, it's only going to be... It's okay. It's only going to be available on GEA Go.
GEA, so you have to pay for it. Behind a paywall, which is going to frustrate a lot of people. Remember this used to raise its head when the Sky contract was there?
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's back again with GEA Go. Sean Kavanagh had a spurt on RT there over the last week or so about it, particularly with the hurling. And then the GA president, Jareth Burns, came out and defended the GA Go, which he defended very well, because at the end of the day, this is revenue that is required that is used for facilities right across the country.
Yes.
So we understand the purpose of GA Go, and we understand that revenue has to be raised for. But if you're a Donegal supporter, or if you're a Tyrone supporter, you will be annoyed that this is not on free-to-air TV. There's a capacity of 17,000 and in around that 16,500.
And would you
in
expect
Park.
A game so, like this being behind a paywall, even though it's less than a ticket, the price of a ticket, if the truth be told, not everyone has access to it either, and it can be a bit touch and go. But do you think this will increase demand for tickets for, you know, a ground that has a 16,000-17,000 capacity?
I think it will, for sure, yeah. It definitely will increase the demand for tickets, and that is going to put a huge stress on both county boards, because the ticket process is now slightly different to what it was in Ulster.
Because
Croke Park now take control of this. It's the All-Ireland series. The direction all comes from Croke Park, not from the Ulster Council. And already there is tickets on sale. So you can buy a package of three tickets, a ticket for the three matches rather, at €50, at a cut price of €50.
There was only 1,000 of them.
A certain amount of them was put up. We understand it is 1,000.
I think 750 was gone by last night.
Yeah,
according to some clubs.
Yeah. So there could be more, but that means you're buying a ticket and you're going to Cork. So the other side of it is, if you don't want to go to three games, at least you have a ticket for the three games. You can still go for two. It's basically two for the price of one.
Yeah.
That's what they're looking at. So you can do it that way, but that's going to cut off after about 1,000.
Yeah.
There is tickets going on general sale this week.
From the GAA?
From the GAA on general sale, I think tomorrow, Thursday.
Yeah.
And again, there's a limited number of those tickets.
Dublin's taking control of this GAHQ, are they seeing what the demand is from clubs and then releasing the
clubs
balance?
Are currently in the process of putting their orders in.
Okay.
So the clubs are putting their orders into the county board, and then they will have a better picture of what each county. The county boards have been given an allocation anyway, so they have for this match. There's only a certain number of them going in general sale. What that is, but the demand of the both counties could actually dictate the amount that goes in general sale. So if there is stress on the counties trying to get tickets due to the numbers in general sale could be curtailed as well. So they could.
Now in Ulster, obviously, right? Jim McGuinness, new era, Derry, huge demand. Tyrone, obviously, always a huge demand. The final, a huge demand. This is asking you really, like, how long's a piece of string? Do you expect there to be a huge demand for Donegal, Tyrone,
for
both counties in this?
Of course there will.
So
it's an All-Ireland, it's an All-Ireland series game.
My point is, theoretically, the demand is going to exceed the capacity before even general tickets are available.
It would be no surprise if that happens.
Okay.
If that happens, it would be no surprise, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a big demand for it. Now, 7 o'clock on a Saturday evening won't suit families.
7:15.
Yeah, 7:15 won't suit families.
That's for the kickoff mistake I made, by the way.
Yeah,
that's 1-1.
Yeah.
Are you happy enough?
Yeah, one happy enough. So the throw-in after 7 o'clock after seven on the Saturday could be late for families, young families. You kids, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 that went, obviously, had that day they'll never forget in Clonus last weekend. That throw-in time's probably late for them because bedtime's coming in at 8 and 9 o'clock. So it is. So that may affect the demand from a family point of view. But if people do want to go and they are members of a club, the easiest way to do this is pitch your order in through your club.
I've received a couple of texts. I can't confirm it, and maybe you can't either, that not every club...
If you go to your club and tell them you want a ticket, the club should get you a ticket.
Right,
they have until tomorrow. I think our own club down in Terriman's closing it off tomorrow evening. So they, and that's it. You get your order in before then, that's it. But I'm sure if you go to your club and whoever deals with the club or the tickets in the club, be it the secretary, and you tell them that you want to order a ticket for Donegal Tyrone,
your membership through the club, they have to help.
And that's the easiest. If you are a member, you'll get a ticket.
Mm-hmm. Right, so the game is behind a paywall, GAA Go.
Which will be very frustrating for some.
Yeah, some people might have bought the season pass and it's like three in a row a game. Yeah. Who's to say? But anyway, that is...
Sorry, can I just go back to the tickets before we move on to that?
Because the
actual seat, the stand in McCool Park holds around about 4,500, mm-hmm. okay? There's none of them tickets going in general sale.
Right.
Okay, because you have season ticket holders who, if they want a ticket, they're guaranteed a seat. But none, and obviously the GA will have a certain number of them. The counties will have a certain number of them. So that stand fills up pretty quick.
Tickets in the stand, would you say?
Possibly. Mm. I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're for. I haven't tried
none
to buy.
Try
to buy them. There might be a few of them going for the stand.
Yeah, right.
But my information was this morning that there was no seats going in general sale, so probably they're not included in that. They could be standing. So if you want a seat, you're going to have to go through your club to try and get one. But you're not going to be guaranteed one because there's only four and a half thousand for them.
Okay. And as you say, there's a lot of demand.
So, but get your order in with your club as soon as you can and take it from there.
So
but back
the game,
to the paywall.
The game, obviously, behind the paywall. It's an evening kickoff, 7:15. People might be happy to pay that or not, or they can't get a ticket. But listen, at the end of the day, nothing beats the radio either too at times, and you've a cracking team in place there as well. So what is our coverage of the match?
We'll be doing what we do is we do every game, Greg. We'll have the build-up and full live match coverage commentary uninterrupted here in Highland from the match. If you can't make it or if you don't want to pay for the game. Like the argument is, this is our national game. This should be free on television,
this game probably wouldn't have been shown pre-GEA Go. It wouldn't have been shown, probably. You know
yes
what I mean?
Yes and no.
Like, I think the
purpose of Go was to provide more games, and it was also to provide a platform for more games to be shown worldwide, not just
Ireland. Stick your headphones on, your cans on there, if you don't mind. Osh. Joanne, good morning to you, Joanne.
Good morning.
Not a quick point. Take as long as you like. I don't know why I said quick point. You text us in, happy enough to come on the radio. What are you talking about in relation to tickets, Joanne?
Yeah, I'm just talking about if you go to all the games and then you couldn't get to the county, you couldn't get to the Ulster final on Sunday because those games didn't go in general sale, but you had to be affiliated with a club. You know, I don't have children. I live in Letterkenny. So why would I be a part of Letterkenny Gales or St. Junans? The base will never do anything for me. You know, it's the county games I've followed, my family followed them, you know, and that kind of thing. And when you want to go, you're cut out of that, you know.
You follow the county team. You don't have skin in the game at club level. You don't have kids, as you say. But it doesn't mean that you're not a big GAA fan. It's just the county team that you follow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's really hard. It's really hard. And I know there has to be a way, you know, to relegated, but there was people, you know, that were there on Sunday that wouldn't go to any games, you know.
I know what you're saying.
They're there on Sunday because they know somebody who can get them a ticket, whether that be a county board member or something like that.
And look too, Joanne, there's a lot of people that pay their 60 or 70 quid membership, whatever it might be, and the only reason is to sort of get access to tickets, for right or wrong. That's part of it. But I mean, to Joanne's point there, Ash, you know, I suppose Joanne recognises there has to be a system, but she's a big GEA fan. She doesn't have kids. She doesn't need to be involved with the club. She just wants to go and watch the county team.
It can be very frustrating for people that's similar in Joanne's position. Maybe the GEA need to look at something different for people like that. But again, they'll throw it back on the table about the membership, Greg. If you are a member of the GAA. Now, Joanne says she's from Letterkenny, but it doesn't necessarily mean she has to join a club in Letterkenny. If she wants to join a club and she pays her membership, she is entitled to a ticket for the game. She would have got a ticket for the Ulster final last week. And there's different things like deadlines on membership, which closes on the 31st of March, which is the proper deadline for membership for the GAA. But you can sign up after that. But the demand was so big that they had to follow strict rules and applying to tickets for the Ulster final. Yeah. So if you were a member by the 31st of March in Donegal, you were guaranteed.
Yeah, but Joanne, if you went to a couple of league games, right? If you went to Derry, you went to Tyrone, do you feel that should be counted? Sort of there should be an allocation of tickets for fans like you outside of the club system, but have proven track record of support.
Well, there's the season ticket.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you have to be a member to be the season ticket holder, but you can purchase season tickets. So when you purchase a season ticket for the year, you will be guaranteed a game for the championship. You will purchase. You'll actually get a seat.
All right,
Joanne, for the match against Tyrone, in the first round of the All Ireland series.
Okay, Joanne. I mean, there's another option there, but still, obviously,
that's something you have to do at the start of the year.
Feels it's unfair. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, Joanne. Listen, I hear you.
Yeah, and just sorry, on the other point about the GAA go, you know, my parents are elderly, like, you know, they'll not have access or they can't access the GAA go, you know, they don't have broadband and they're not in the locality to have fibre, you know, to run the game, you know, so it is about some player that way, you know.
Yeah, and that is it. I mean, if GAA go was available as a channel on your telly, maybe be slightly more palatable, but I take your point. Lovely to speak to you, Joanne. I hope you get a ticket, by the way. Sometimes the closer you get to the day, people's plans change and tickets do become available. A caller says, so to get tickets to games, there's a tax of joining a club. How is that fair? Why are the tickets not divided between members and non-members? Is it a tax for joining a club? I mean, at the end of the day, the players that are playing for the county don't play for the county unless they're playing for the clubs.
Yes.
You know, and it's an association, a grassroots association. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's fine now when things are good. But if we hadn't won a game for the last year, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation. Everyone wants to sort of get on.
Listen, when you win matches, you're on the bus. You're
and
jumping
Jimmy's
on the
winning,
bus.
And Jimmy
yeah,
is
yeah.
When,
and particularly the way Donegal have played through the championship, and the buzz and the atmosphere and the excitement and everything comes with it. People want to get on board. People want to be part of that when something special happens. And it's as the journey continues, it gets better. Okay. So it does.
Getting the wind up.
Caroline telling us to move on.
Greg, please ask Oisin, how is it that some clubs are given concessions for OAPs but other clubs aren't?
Well, there's a concession for OAPs anyway on the ticket price.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the same as the student and juveniles. There'll be an OAP price as well, and the club should be applying that because the county board are applying it.
Right, so listen, the one thing we can guarantee you is you'll listen to everybody. I'll tell you what I've done in the past. GEA Go Highland. It's very easy to get them aligned. That's my dream if I can't go to the game. Obviously, you'd be far better to see it on terrestrial. But anyway,
OAPs are €20.
Okay,
for the match, adults are €25, juveniles are
every
five.
Club should be passing that.
Well,
on.
that's the information that is coming from the county board to the clubs, and that's going to my own club, Greg. That's
good stuff. Your own club is Termon.
Termon's CLG and Charmon.
Yeah, we always love to see them coming down to Neath Bridge, give them a good kicking.
Well, you need Breeder Downings at the minute, or do you know what side you're on? You have a dual membership.
Foot in both parishes. All right. Okay. Right. I'm only joking about that. Okay. All right. Take care of yourself. Okay. Thanks very much, Josh. Back with more after these.
The county's number one talk show, The 9 Till Noon Show on Highland Radio.
The 9 Till Noon Show with Letterkenny Credit Union. Simplify your debts with a debt consolidation loan from Letterkenny Credit Union. Call us on 07491 02126 or apply online via our app or in office today.
Experience total relaxation in the Spa at Orchids at the Holyrood Hotel Bundoran, recently awarded Best Hotel Spa Getaway at the RSVP Spa Awards. Enjoy luxury spa baths, revitalizing facials, rejuvenating massages, pampering body treatments, outdoor hot tub and tranquil Japanese garden. Visit on a luxury spa day, pop in for some me time or buy the perfect present with a gift voucher. Relax and let the Spa at Orchids transport you to another world. See HolyroodHotel.com.
If the medical experts get it wrong, everything changes. From misdiagnosis or delayed diagnosis to surgical injury or even poor treatment, all have physical, emotional, and financial consequences. We're here to help. So if your treatment didn't go according to plan, speak to our experienced medical negligence team at McElhenney & Associates. Find us online or call 074 917 5989. McElhenney & Associates Solicitors, Stranorler. In contentious business, a solicitor may not calculate fees or other charges as a percentage or proportion of any award or settlement.
For the biggest names in perfumes and aftershaves, visit McGee's Chemist Letterkenny. Dior, Armani and Hugo Boss. Victor and Rolf, Marc Jacobs and Lancome. Also Gucci, Yves Saint Laurent, Prada and many more. From timeless classics to celebrity favourites, there's a perfume or aftershave for everyone. At McGee's Chemist Letterkenny and online at mcgees.ie.
TFI Local Link, your local bus service, keeping rural communities in Donegal connected as part of the Transport for Ireland network. For more on service arrangements, visit transportforireland.ie.
The Cope Dunloe's clothing department's exclusive customer appreciation day takes place this Thursday, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy discounts, giveaways and styling tips from our experts. Don't miss this fabulous event. See the Cope Dunloe on Facebook and Instagram for more details.
Okie doke, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It's Wellness Wednesday, and of course, this is Lyme Disease Awareness Month, and we're joined on the programme by Anne Maher, author of Lyme and Co, Me and Us, Anne Has Lyme Disease. You're with me, Anne. Good morning to you.
Hiya, Greg. Thanks for having me.
How are you keeping?
I'm doing good, up and down.
It's up and down. That's the story of a Lyme disease sufferer, isn't it? There's no silver bullet. I mean, obviously, and we'll talk about it, the difficulties in getting diagnosis and getting the right treatment. But as I say, that's not a silver bullet. You can have good periods, bad periods, and then often people are left dealing with the consequences of having Lyme's and not actually necessarily Lyme's itself.
Yeah, it's I'm actually Lyme free, you know, blood test. Mm. But it's the damage that it has done in the early years before I was diagnosed that was the issues, you know.
Yeah.
I have neurological Lyme disease, so I had facial paralysis and acute renal failure and pneumonia and a whole list of arthritises of different types. Yeah.
Can you trace this back to when it all began? Is it the mid-90s?
95, Greg. Mm. Now, I don't remember getting bitten, and that was probably one of my worst issues because I had no proof. Back then, we didn't have mobile phones to photograph everything. But I was at my nephew's wedding in New Jersey, and I came home very sick. I thought people talk about jet lag, and you know yourself. But I had a rash on my leg, but I was told it was ringworm. Now, at that time, even my GP didn't know about the bullseye rash.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a learning
And not
process.
Everyone gets the bullseye rash. So
no,
if you had the right information at the right time, this would have left you very lucky. But unfortunately, the awareness of the bullseye rash wasn't there.
It's all about awareness, Greg. Yeah. You know,
that's what
we're
doing this. And I'll tell you, there's a high prevalence of Lyme disease here in Donegal in particular. People can go out and enjoy the wilderness, the wildlife and all of that, but particularly check yourself for ticks, particularly check young people for ticks, because primarily that is, or is it exclusively transmitted by tick bites?
Yeah, it's mostly tick bites. But look, we were trying to run a campaign to get awareness signs up, and I see in Glenveagh National Park where they're bringing it back to the wild the way it was. But they need awareness signs up in all these public areas where people are walking with young children. And
well, that was proposed, and that was a motion that was passed at council many years ago, and nothing ever come of it.
Nothing happened. I knew that. Yeah. I know patients had a meeting in the council too at that time.
Yeah. Back to you though. 1995. The onset of symptoms was rapid, and this then led to quite a long period of time, presumably from one consultant to the next, from one GP to the next. It's in your head, it's not your head, it's this, it's that, treatment for this, this for that. At what point, talk to me about that experience briefly, and then at what point was there actually a diagnosis?
Greg, it's very upsetting. If you're not well, you're fatigued, you have pain all over, headaches. I had terrible darts of pain up my neck into my head, and my senses were affected, my eyesight, hearing, smell, everything. And it's frustrating and so disheartening going from consultant to you know, you get an appointment with a new consultant and you think he's going to have all the answers. But because of our negative results, it's ruled out. So I had 8 years of that going from one to the other. And I tell you, it took a toll on my and the family. We had 4 school-going children at the time, so it wasn't easy.
And how debilitating was it for you at times over those 8 years? Long spells in hospital, in bed?
I used to collapse a lot, and I was in bed, and I'd be trying to get up in the evening before the children go home on the school bus to make things look a little bit normal. But they knew that sometimes I wouldn't make it out of the bed, and they'd come. My son reminded me recently, since my book was out, that they used to come down, sit around the bed and tell me about their day. And it's so disheartening because, you know, people think then, oh, it's all in your head. And I mean, I like many was offered antidepressants, but I totally refused them because the year I got sick, I did the ladies' mini marathon that year with friends. I used to line dance and set dance and loved dancing of any type. And I was fit and healthy. So how can you change so quickly from being a healthy person to dragging yourself out of bed, you know?
Yeah, and then it sort of it feels a little bit like gaslighting too, because you know there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
But you're being told that there isn't, or that the science isn't saying there is. Well, you know there is. And what do you do? 8 years on, you happened to get a diagnosis in Switzerland. How did that come about?
My brother in the States was doing some research for me, and coming up to 2000, he said, you know, you need to buy a computer. Back then, it sounds silly now, but back then we didn't even have a computer. So we got one for Christmas, and I joined a Eurolyme email group. And this patient, I always remember his first name, it was Bob. He had gone to Dr. Meir in Switzerland, and he had the whole of itinerary and his plan, where he stayed, how he got there. And I printed it all off. And I made an appointment and went there.
And was it instant, the diagnosis?
I spent 10 days there. I had a spec scan in Basel Hospital on my brain, and they phoned the doctor the day after. I was at high risk of stroke at that time, and I shouldn't even have been flying. So she started me on aspirin straight away. So she done blood tests in Switzerland. Some were sent to Germany and more were sent to the States, and I tested positive for Lyme disease and a co-infection, which is Mycoplasma fermentans, and it's native to New Jersey, where I was. Well, what I was told.
Okay, so that identifies potentially quite strongly where you got the bite then.
Yeah.
So When you talk about risk of stroke, what we this obviously then is were you suffering from high blood pressure or was it affecting your heart?
I had got facial paralysis in 97.
Right.
Now, the call of Bell's palsy,
many
and I was
strokes,
told
really.
I'd be grand in 6 weeks. Mm. But I still have some paralysis. And, you know, last year was a learning curve for me. Early last year, my face swelled up again as norm, as it usually had over all those years. But February, my tongue swelled up badly. And I live on my own and I was frightened out of my life. 3 nights and 3 days, I didn't sleep properly. And I contacted Dr. Armin from Armin Labs, who has been very helpful over the years to many of us. And he put me in touch with Dr. Rick Sector, a maxillofacial surgeon in Zarlou. So I went over there for scans and tests that I couldn't get done here in April. And I went back for the procedures in July. And I spent 2 weeks there. And would you believe the facial paralysis has improved so much. My son nursed it straight away when I got home. And I'm off all painkillers and the low-dose antibiotics I'd been on for nearly 15 years.
So you're off the antibiotics?
Yeah, I'm off that. So I was on a low-dose antibiotic to try and keep the infection under control.
Yeah. And why have you been able to come off that? Sorry, if in case I missed that, Anne. Is it just
that? The maxillofacial surgeon noticed I had infection in my jawbone and my gums. So he went in there and removed all that bacterial infection, which was caused from the Lyme disease.
So in layman's terms, was this the Lyme disease was living in those areas potentially?
Absolutely, for all years, so he reckons.
So anyone that's still coming positive for Lyme's disease really potentially should be looking for points of infection that may not be obvious.
Yeah, I mean, he done a special 3D scan of my face and some other ones that I can't even remember the name of them. But he showed me clearly on the screens where my issue was. And my jawbone at the paralysis side, there was really like a ball of infection in there. Mm. And he said that would have been there from, you know, building up over the years.
So the reason we're talking here is that this is not a problem that's gone away. Unfortunately, it's a problem that has been downplayed. I actually even think of I don't want to mention that. Well, I believe Leo Varadkar was questioning this in the Dáil going back some time ago. I can't remember exactly the same quote, but he wasn't exactly saying, right, OK, this is a major issue. We need to get on top of this. That's as far as I'm prepared to quote him off the top of my head. Obviously, then some within the medical profession have played it down. I think there's been a reluctance to admit this because if this is treated as Lyme's disease and accepted on a national scale, it is going to be a significant extra burden on the health service. Talk to me about that. Is what I'm saying there accurate, or is that what's felt amongst the community?
We had a meeting with a certain health minister some years ago. It was organised by a TD friend of my late brother, Bill. And they weren't having anything to do with us because they didn't find any fault with the HSC method of testing.
That wasn't Minister O'Reilly, was it? No.
I'm not really saying who. No, okay, after him.
After. Well, you're really narrowing it down, Anne. Come here.
I give you the year. It's in the book.
We'll get the book then. So now we'll leave that as a teaser for the book, Anne. But the reason why we're speaking is that this is something we don't. I don't think we know who's affected, why they're affected. But what we do know is that if someone does get a tick bite, if the red ring rash is there or not, that at the very early stages, particularly, if someone gets a tick bite and they get the right treatment early on, the consequences of this can be greatly limited, if not completely avoided. And that's why it's so important, isn't it, Anne?
A couple of local patients here that after my doctor started looking after me, a couple of patients locally went to him, got adequate antibiotics and fully recovered from after their bullseye rashes and been sick for a couple of months, and they fully recovered. And that's the proof. Early diagnosis. Look, even a clinical diagnosis, a bit of common sense, if you have, after getting bitten, you should have treatment ASAP and not wait for 6 weeks for results to come back.
Dr. Lambert, Jack Lambert, we've spoke to him regularly in this show. I know he's taken an interest in long COVID now as well, which very early on when we were talking about long COVID, before I knew Jack Lambert was involved in it, I was thinking, you know, a lot of this long COVID conversation is sounding very much like Lyme's. Now, there's not a huge crossover, don't get me wrong. And then I learned that Jack Lambert had taken interest in it. And I thought, you know, I thought, right, OK, actually, I wasn't going mad. But the problem is Dr. Jack Lambert's not going to be around forever. And I mean in terms of his professional career. He might choose to do other things.
But you mentioned Dr. Lambert, he actually contributed a piece to my book too. But I'm talking about science. He's with the Lyme Resource Centre in Scotland, and they have brilliant awareness signs with QR codes of the HSE information and the Resource Centre information. And I just wish that councils around the country would contact him and erect these signs and make people aware. You know.
Yeah, but just the one other thing I was going to conclude on Mr. Lambert is what happens when he retires. There's
a
vacuum
we're all in trouble, aren't we?
Yeah. Okay.
Because no one has come on board to support his even with long COVID.
Yeah.
You know, he they just sidetracked him. You know.
Do you think we need to now? I mean, obviously you're an individual, okay? So it would need more research and study. Do you think we need to, for those particularly long-term sufferers, that we need to find a way to ascertain if Lyme disease is hibernating or covertly in a particular organ or a particular part of the body, and that if it's eliminated, maybe people can have better outcomes, long-term futures? Have you been convinced that that's a path we need to potentially be going down now, given your experience?
Yeah. Greg, neurological Lyme is a serious issue in some diagnosis of Alzheimer's and dementia.
Mm.
And you know what? There's a big query now about congenital Lyme. I mean, it was brought up in the documentary Under Our Skin years ago, the infection passing from mother to baby.
Mm.
And there's still debates. They're to and fro in the CDC about whether it's actually. But think about that. If a mother passes the infection to a baby, so that means it's in the bloodstream. So if someone is not properly diagnosed and they happen to be a blood donor, what happens then?
Yeah.
You know, there's a European group has been in contact, and they're working on that possibility.
Okay.
So very serious.
And I hope the improvements you've experienced more recently continue. Your book, Lyme & Co, Me and Us, where is that available?
It's available on Amazon. Now, because of Brexit, the paperback is only available through their German site, but the hardback is complicated, Greg.
Bloody Brexit again. Okay.
Anyway, anyone can contact me I'd locate one.
Always good to speak to you. Thanks for
Greg,
helping
thanks
us.
Thanks a million. And awareness. Just get the councils on up with their signs and whatever.
And I know you know someone I know. Don't listen to a word they say, all right?
What?
I know you know someone I know. Don't listen to a word they say, all right?
Okay, Greg. Listen, thanks for having me. And mind the ticks. And
all right, indeed, for sure. And thank you very much indeed. All right, so as I say, you know, if you're out and about, enjoy. We have to enjoy our beautiful scenery, our beautiful surroundings. But some would describe Donegal as a minefield for infected ticks. So just check yourself, or particularly check your young ones if they do get a tick bite. And watch out for the red rash that can surround the bite area. And if anyone starts sort of experiencing any symptoms, please go to your GP, but also go to your GP with the knowledge of Lyme disease, just in case they are not quite reciprocal or they're not quite interested in it. But it's knowledge is power, and that's all we're trying to do. And for goodness sakes, every county council should have signs up to just advise people of the danger. Come on and enjoy it. But just in case these series of events happen, have the knowledge to make sure you have the best possible outcomes. Now, I'm really, really pleased to welcome onto the programme Sister Lucia Murashko, who is a nun in the Order of St. Basil and is currently talking at the novena in honour of Saint Teresa in Saint Eugene's Cathedral, Derry. Sister Lucia, thank you so very much for joining us.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And you are very welcome to the northwest of Ireland. You have spent much of your time recently in Ukraine. Can you talk to us a little bit about that experience, sister?
Well, all my life I spent in Ukraine, but the last 2 years, actually almost 3 years, I was in the convent, in the monastery in Zaporizhia, which is west of Ukraine. And, well, it's not easy to be there right now because of the war, and we can see how terrible it is. And we meet also a lot of people with a good heart and who support each other, and that's my experience of the last few years in the western part of Ukraine.
And in that part of the Ukraine, has there been much active conflict, sister?
Yes, unfortunately, it's 4 kilometers from our city. There is front line, yes. And we can hear and we can see also all the destructions and the horrors of the war. So we hope that it will finish soon, and somehow the God will bring us peace as we pray and ask him for that.
Sister Lucia, often the conversation has had now about Ukraine is 2 years into the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And you talked of the horror of war. And I think often when we discuss Ukraine, we actually forget the awful experiences people, the awful loss of life. As much as you're comfortable doing so, can you remind us of the horror of this war?
Well, okay. I don't know. The people suffer. The civilians suffer, and the soldiers are wounded every day, and they die also for us, to protect us, civilians in the territories that they are not occupied right now. I will tell you a story. Our neighbor Yulia, she works in a hospital. And all the hospitals now in Zaporizhia are full of, wounded soldiers. But also they bring wounded civilians to the hospital. And Julia said that there were a child, a boy, 11 or 12 years old. They brought him from the village, from front line. They were bombing there, and the child was in the blood, covered with the blood and dirt and so on. And the doctors tried to help him and to try to get to know where is he's wounded. And he said all the time, he said, "That's not my blood, that's not my blood." And they saw that the child is okay, like his body is all right. And then they said, "Whose blood is on your clothes and on your body?" And he said, because they were bombing, and his mother died, and he gathered the parts of her body on the yard where they lived. So, and of course, can you imagine how can people live with this, like this child who tried to bury his mother and try to survive and the people are suffering because some villages are only on the map. They are destroyed completely. The people live underground for years, for these 2 years and more. They stay without light and water, and I don't know how to explain
and
to
Lucia,
you.
And Sister Lucia, if I can ask, is there a reason why? Is there a reason why people? This is to help us understand. Is there a reason why people in some of these villages are under greatest threat? Can't move west within Ukraine, or even actually leave the country for refuge. Can you help us understand as to why some might remain and have to witness these awful situations as you've outlined?
Okay, they try to find many. You know, when the war started, many people, almost all the people, were evacuated from the place of the war. However, after a year, half a year, some of the families, they could not find themselves in other countries or in other places. They love their homes. They have nothing, only their property there. And many of them return home because they could not stay in other places. I cannot explain you the western part of Ukraine. The people are more like they travel a lot, but the people on the central and eastern part of Ukraine, they always lived on their own land, mm-hmm. and they love being there, and they just could not arrange their life in the other places. Mm-hmm. So many of them came back, you know, with the hope that they can survive and they will be, their region will be liberated soon.
Okay.
So there are many people who are abroad and they try to live somewhere like refugees, but many of them came back because it was too hard to live somewhere else because,
yeah.
you know, it's hundreds and thousands of people, and even in other villages and other cities in Ukraine are full of refugees,
Okay, it's a fascinating insight, Sister Lucia, and a story I think that's often not told. Just one more word on your experience. You've been encouraged to leave. You've had opportunities to leave, yet you remained. Why?
Because I feel that it is important to stay there with the people who stay, with the soldiers who fight and protect us. It is important to be present among the people who suffered, among the people who need and search for hope and search for God. And this is why every day, like we in the beginning, half of our community left the place, and two of us stayed there. And every day we checked if it's God's will to be there. If he wants us to be there, he should send us someone who needs help. And there were always people who came to our monastery and asked for help, civilians, soldiers, and refugees who stayed for a night or two while they were moving further to the western part of Ukraine. So You should stay. I think many people would do the same because mm-hmm. if you love God, you will follow him anywhere he will call you. So
Sister Lucia,
I think
in the space of the last couple of years, do you fear or do you have an opinion as to whether the Ukrainian people can continue with their resistance, can continue with seeing off this Russian invasion? Because we talk of attitudes changing in globally, but it must be very difficult to live under this sort of constant push against you and to push back. Do you have any fear that the people of Ukraine might be losing, not their resolve, maybe that's not the correct word, but I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say respectfully and politely, but I wonder how much longer can they resist?
We will resist to the end of our lives. There is no choice for us. You know, Ukrainians are exhausted of the war, and we are tired, despaired in many times also. But there is no other way, just to stay for peace and to protect our own land. So this is what I hear from the soldiers and from people. We are in our homes. We did not come to our other people to grab and to kill others. We want to live on our land. This is attitude. The people are exhausted. We need help of other countries, of other people around the world. We need help very much, because without that help we will not survive, but we will stand to the end.
Okay.
Like, there is no choice.
Sister Lucia, do people still have an opportunity to hear you talk during your visit in Derry? And if so, do you know when?
Tonight we will have a prayer, 7:30. It's about 1 hour, and then I will have my time to share experience living in Ukraine, near to the front line.
Sister Lucia Murashko, thank you so very much for your time. I do appreciate it, and take care of yourself, please.
Thank you for listening to me.
No, it's important. God bless you too, Sister Lucia Murashko, who is a nun in the Order of St. Basil, and she is speaking this evening at St. Eugene's Cathedral in Derry. I want to mention, by the way, on Business Matters this week, Chris Ashmore's guest is Kieran McKenna. He's the owner of two family-run Landis stores in Inishowen, one in Buncrana, where he also has a Circle K filling station. The other is in Drong, Quigley's Point, where they manage the fuel for Inishowen Co-op. He was recently one of seven businesses recognised by FBD for their focus on their customers and local community, and there's a big promotional package available. Now, this, you would have heard me speaking to Chris about this last Wednesday. That programme was due to be broadcast on last Sunday at 6 p.m, but extra time and penalties put paid to that. But you can still listen on the radio. It's just after the 6 o'clock news this Sunday. Dorothy Piper is a service user with Vision Ireland, of course, formerly NCBI. She's with us now. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Greg. Good morning.
You've got 2 minutes to sell. Sell the new, bigger Vision Ireland store in Letterkenny. Come here today at 10:30. The new, bigger and better, probably, Vision Ireland store in Letterkenny was opened by yourself, Dorothy. Lovely wee honour, isn't
yeah.
it? Talk to us about this new centre, please.
Yeah, the centre in High Road, I only found out about it a few years ago. It's there last time. A lot of people don't even know it's there. It's in the old Letterkenny Credit Union office. And they provide great service for anybody with bad vision.
Mm-hmm.
And you can refer yourself to it. You just ring up and they decide if you want to come in then. And they help me a lot. And I mean, I can never thank them. They've done so much for me. They give me
I think you described their support as life-changing, Dorothy, which is an amazing
yeah.
thing to be able to say, isn't it?
Yes, it is indeed, yes. They weren't shy about keeping you doing things, making you do things, and telling you that you can do things. And I found them very, very helpful. And even after I had finished with them, they still ring me now to see if everything's okay. During COVID, we had Zoom as well. So, like, as I say, what amazed me the most is a lot of people don't even know about it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm out and about, like, and things like that, and I say to people, I go to MCBA then, which is Vision Ireland now, and they say, what's that? And I say, gosh, did you not know about that? If you have bad vision, they really help you to read, help you use magnifying glasses right, and give you different things to help you with your vision.
Yeah, of course. And which, as I said, each individual on, you know, when they get a diagnosis or whatever, when they maybe want a bit of assistance, it's up to them. But you would say strongly encourage them. Just finally, remind us where it is, Dorothy. We'll do a longer piece in the future.
Yes, it's on the High Road, the old Letterkenny Credit Union office in the High Road, just below the Arch and Inn.
Well done.
So it is.
And well done to you.
There's an office up there. And the staff are brilliant, and they don't rush you. They spend so much time with you. They have a technician come from Sligo as well that helps you with your iPad and your phone. I mean, that's why it was life-changing for me, because when I thought, oh, my vision's gone, I've lost my phone, I've lost my iPad. No, I have my phone. I carry my phone with me. I just open it up, and I say, call Greg, call Tom, call whoever I wish to call. It does it for me. Brilliant. And my iPad's the same.
Okay.
So, I mean, they just need my life.
Brilliant.
Very, very good.
Dorothy Piper, thank you so much. Sorry to be so brief with you. Have a wonderful
Greg. Thank
day.
You very
well
much.
Done on being the official.
Wish them all very well in the new shop, and for everybody to go down there and support them, and also to keep supporting the Vision Bingo, because that only for them, we wouldn't have this help. And everybody should avail of it that's able to, because they are there and they want you to call. Okay, great.
Thanks,
thank
Dorothy.
You.
Take care of yourself. Back tomorrow morning at 9:00.